You're recording this?
Yes, it's a Nixon thing. I'm sorry.
Have I told you about that before? Burn the tapes.
I will. I promise I will never air this. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pod Stallions. My name is Brian, and with me to my left is my friend Jason. How are you?
Hello, Brian. Hello, everyone. I'm okay. I'm living the life, as usual.
Yes, I am also living the life.
Well, you know, before we even go any further, you had texted me from your Migo meet, your little your play date, Migo.
My little slumber party.
Your little slumber party.
Sorry, that sounded really weird.
Pillow fight, Migo
meet.
A big
lisp in there for some reason.
You had texted me that you'd heard some very nice things about, and I don't want to hear the nice things about you, and I don't want to hear the nice things about the message board and the Migo Museum or Plaid Stallions. I want to hear the nice things you heard about this podcast.
And oh, sure. Yeah, no.
Typically about me. But
I met a lot of awesome folks at Migo Meet, and one of the recurring themes, and this really made me happy, were a lot of people saying, your podcast got me through blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
You know, COVID or, you know, depression or... And it's like, oh my God, you know, you want to find meaning in what you do. And when somebody actually says like that, that means more to me than, you know, you and I getting a TV deal, because it's like, yeah, we landed somewhere. We found, you know, somebody found meaning in what we're doing. And that's so cool. And I also got, yeah. I was going to meet like several members of the Pod Stallions group, and that was awesome.
From the Pod Stallions, the Facebook group.
Your Facebook group, yeah. And we're working on something for Migo Meet, you know, for next year, and it's like, no, this has to have a Pod Stallions component every time we do this.
Oh.
Yeah.
I like that already. I'll be honest, I'd prefer a TV deal.
Yeah, okay, yeah, no, you know, I didn't say the money was the problem.
Right around the time that you were at your little fun fest, I have been in the process of moving, and I've been my friend convinced me to do some yard sale type things at his place,
right?
Which I've never done in my life, and it's an interesting bunch that come out. He put stuff up on Craigslist with photos, and he really did put the effort in. And there was a gentleman named Javier who came two Saturdays in a row. He did it two Saturdays in a row, and he said the nicest things about the podcast and just how much he enjoys it. And, you know, of course he knows all your stuff too. He watched, he wanted the YouTube show, you know, Plastic Soul to come back. He was like, I watched it. You gotta do something. He's like, I'm telling you, man. And he hung around for 90 minutes on the second Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Just hung out and talked. And some other guy comes up and starts talking about music, because I had some like music DVDs, and he's got a Harry Nilsson T-shirt, and then I start talking about Nilsson with him, and he's like, wow, some of this stuff's kind of hard to get. I'm like, you mean that like the one that Eric Idle like produced in the early? He's like, how do you know about Eric? Some other guy comes over and starts talking about the Mighty Boosh and Bootsy Collins and the.
Oh, that's so weird. I just had a discussion about the Mighty Boosh.
And it was just this like everybody that was kind of around. I was just vibing with everyone about these weird little things. And this Javier just kind of was there, and he kept going, you got to do it. You got to do a show. You got to do something, man, that you know about so much stuff. And people like talking about this stuff. And of course I said, yes, but you know, you got to, how do you elevate it? How do you boost the signal? But, yeah. But it was right around the time that you were doing your thing, and you sent me these texts, and I thought, well, that is nice that people.
Oh, yeah, it was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, I got to meet a longtime listener, Chris Height.
Chris Height. Yes.
Yeah.
Picture for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he probably has listener number two. As his badge.
fan club badge. Yeah.
Yeah. 0002. And that was a trip. He's just as cool as I thought he'd be.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, it really was. I mean, these this summer, I've been at a lot of shows and done a lot of stuff, and I don't really travel well. I have really terrible travel anxiety and stuff, but I always like left the town totally chill. Like, just like, oh yeah, no, like, you know, like San Diego, it was a wonderful trip home.
Yeah, I forgot.
And Philadelphia, again, I was having like a blast going home.
The one Comic-Con, the first I missed.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know. And I believe people asked me about that at Comic-Con. And I was like, yeah, this is bizarro Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Like, where I'm not in a big booth. Like, you'd be in a big booth. I'm in the smallest. I'm sharing a booth. I'm sharing a table.
Yeah. But it's just the fact that you're there and I'm not is very sad for me. It would have been great to...
Honestly, I felt like I lived in a borough. Like, I'm not a big crowd guy. So, Robin and I were at this table, and we were just, like, on this little kind of... We were way at the back. And it really was sort of like you live in a little section of a big city.
That's exactly...
Yeah.
I mean, even just saying... When you're talking to people, saying, okay, well, I'll meet you over there. What time are you going to be at the whatever booth? Up around 2. All right, look, if I can get out of here in 5 minutes, and it's with no one in the place, it's a 5-minute walk to get to that booth. But with the the freeway, like, traffic.
Yeah, and it's everyone's not looking forward.
No, yeah, they're all...
Entire everybody room is looking elsewhere.
Everyone's just stopping to look at stuff, or they're stopping to take pictures of hot girls in like cosplay, or people dressed like robots or whatever. And it's nothing is quick. Everything is like, okay, I'll be there. I'm on my way. And it is overwhelming. And then you get down to the end, and it does feel like a different world on each end.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of, but that's kind of the fun too.
Yeah, it's kind of the fun, but something happened today that really made me realize that I'm a little burned out. This is the weekend of Fan Expo in Canada, which is the San Diego Comic Con, but it's like Toronto Comic Con.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And my friend Sam Noir got me. We worked a panel where we were going to do a thing on weird superhero merchandise, which is obviously something, you know, the both of us love and we bonded over. So I was, you know, I was really excited, but it was like the worst day because I got there and I couldn't find the will call booth. They sent me to 3 different places, including 5 stories down a parking garage. And then I had to go up that parking garage, and I realized, hey, my heart's in pretty good shape because I'm running with, you know, bags, and I'm fine. But and then the worst part was when I finally found the will call booth, the woman actually asked me, like, do you want to talk to the doctor? And I'm like, no, I just ran up a parking garage. But
She actually
offered me to go talk to the medic, and I'm like, yeah, no, I'm red because I ran up.
God, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So did you have the panel?
Yeah, I did, and here's what happened, though, and this is what's funny about it, is I was late, and then I stupidly went to the wrong side of the con, and that was my fault, and then, you know, my friend started calling me, and I didn't know this, but he was putting it on the PA.
Oh, the tenor
in the panel. And I'm going like, dude, I'm going to have a heart attack and cry. Like, I don't know. And,
that's like, well, Brian Heiler, please report to the,
well, what was great about it was,
I would have hid under a table, I think.
So what happened was my friend Sam Noir, he's got vision issues, so he couldn't go out and find me. And he said, I'm going to give my phone to Spider-Man. Look for the guy dressed as Spider-Man.
Right.
Look for the guy with the shirt. All right.
Yeah.
So he called me a couple of times, and like literally I had moved 5 feet in between the phone calls because it was just like traffic jams for an escalator, right? And
it's giving me anxiety.
And I am an agoraphobic, and to be honest with you, I said to my wife, I did the Elaine on the subway from Seinfeld scream 100 times, you know, while I was there. And
wow.
Finally, I get down the escalator and there's this guy dressed as Spider-Man. I'm like, are you my guy? And he's like, yes. And
I'm so glad it was the right guy.
Yeah.
At a convention.
I didn't wake up in a bucket of ice.
Yeah, exactly. Or just let's head to the men's room. Come on, this way.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You're that guy? Oh, yeah, I am. Come on, let's go.
My name is not that. Yeah. And I get into the thing and I'm sweating. But I got applause because, like, my friend had crowd worked everybody for 15 nice. Minutes and brought them into this. And then we did the show, and it's the closest thing I've ever done to stand up because it was so bang, bang, bang. It's
like an episode of a sitcom. Like,
yeah. And it just so, like, after that, I was just kind of brain dead, you know, and I went back to my friend's booth and we were going to talk, but his booth is for him to talk to people other than me. And he was busy. So I walked around the show and I realized, like, I don't care. I just, you know, I found Vintage Toys and it was like, oh, it's the store in my town. Like,
right.
Like, it's like, of all, like, the stuff I could go look at on Tuesday is right.
Well, it would have been a different experience if everything had worked out and you'd been on time and in there, you probably would have hung out. Mm. And that would have been different. So it's clearly,
I don't know. I think I just, like, I'm home to stay for a couple of months. I'm going to do the Monster Bash in November, but I think I'm done traveling for a while.
Yeah, I don't think you should travel alone. That's for sure. I think you need to hire an assistant or something to get you back and forth and to make sure you get to the right panels at the right time.
Oh my God, I'm the worst.
Yeah, you need help. So anybody listening, if you want a free plane ticket,
I was late for everything.
Jesus. That's a nightmare. That is like out of the best.
Well,
part is,
I don't know if I've
the
told
best
you
part
this
is before. My friend Sam has vision issues.
Yeah.
So he said to me, I'm gonna give my phone to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And just look for Spider-Man, which at Fan Expo or any at Comic-Con is like saying, find someone in a Star Wars T-shirt. It's like,
well, yeah, it was actually pretty funny that the first guy he was not like a traditional Spider-Man. He was
Was he 2099 or?
No, actually, Sam didn't know the iteration, but it looked cool. It looked like Guardians of the Galaxy Spider-Man. Like, he had one of those Rocketeer type jackets on.
It's a miracle you made it to the show and it all worked out and nobody.
And I also never got the guy's name. Like, I
never had a heart attack.
Spider-Man.
He didn't have a heart attack or a stroke, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, you know what? I realized, hey, I'm healthier than I thought. Because this is bad.
A good dry run.
Yeah, and I took the train home, and I immediately showered. it's been a very busy summer, but I'm looking forward to slowing down and doing more conversations with you, sir.
Speaking of heart attacks, tell us what our topic is today.
I believe it is the obscure Ridley Scott film, Alien. And I think we're coming from this from very two perspectives. Like,
yeah, well, I know we are. That's half the reason. That's half the reason I want to do it. Because
No,
it's a long overdue conversation about where you park your cars with all of this stuff. But the reason that has been on the brain is because of this new film that came out, Alien Uterus. What's it called? Alien Romulus.
It's Alien Romulans.
Alien Romulus. And there's been 8,000 YouTube videos dissecting every bit of the history of the films and the thing and the this and the that. And I thought, well, you know, the kids are talking about it. We better get our and talk about this instead of, you know, Filipino James Bond films or something. It's and
you know, I just feel a little hurt by that.
I happen to love the original film. It's one of my favorite movies. It is something that I can just watch every month, just about. And it's one of those, you know, where I'm really fascinated by the behind the scenes of these things that shouldn't have worked, or that didn't work, or that nearly fell apart, or the director was about to get fired, or just every aspect of it was just a clusterfuck. And then you end up getting something, you know, beautiful as a result that everybody, you know, talks about for decades and whatever, whether Godfather, Star Wars, or Alien, or Jaws, or whatever.
Or Catwoman.
Knowing, you know, more and more about Catwoman was shit.
Never
getting its day in court, so that's never gonna happen. But
I have the
there's something about the knowing about the elements that went into the thing that just make me appreciate it even more when I do watch it. And it's just
the story of Jaws is amazing.
Yes, and it's kind of the same thing where when you watch Alien, we're so familiar with so many of these faces now. Harry Dean Stanton had been around for, you know, like I think almost 20 years. No, maybe.
Can we only refer to Sigourney Weaver as Signory Weaver in a tribute to your brother?
I'll never forget him. He was,
because I don't call her Sigourney Weaver anymore.
He was a changed man. He was a changed man when he the next day after he'd seen Alien, he'd fallen in love with this woman in this movie. And as an 8-year-old, he's coming up to me going, "Hey, you know that your friend down the block that can get addresses to movie studios and knows how to send away for family? Yeah, I need this woman, Signory Weaver woman. Oh my God, I'm just in love with her. I gotta get her." And I think he wrote her a fan letter. I don't know how I got the address or how this kid down the block knew where to get these addresses to send fan mail to people, but he did, and I got it for him. And I don't think he has any recall of sending a letter, but I know he wrote a letter to her saying how much he enjoyed and then when I eventually saw the film, which I think wasn't until it aired on television the first time, and even then it was edited, I started to get, and then when you really see the film, you're like, well, no wonder he was a senior in high school, and he was, you know, saw this, everything about this woman was like, oh my God, that's my kind of woman right there. That's what I got to meet. But it never happened. They never got together. But he's, you know, happily married, and everything worked out for him. But anyway, so just kick this off. Alien is one of my favorite movies. It's just the aesthetic and the tone of it and the performances and the lighting and everything about it. And I'm fascinated by it. And then the world that sort of comes off of it, besides the first film, has been so strange and so hit or miss, and in my opinion, mostly miss, that it is kind of extraordinary. And it's hard to think of another property that started so strong and then had a chapter two, so to speak, that was so strong, that is still being held up the way it is, that has been so slipshod in so many ways. And so, again, not that there isn't merit, I don't want to be that person that's crapping on all of these things, but and I think it's a testament to how perfect that first film is, and how it just kind of, you know, the second one is really, you know, perfect too. I'm not a Cameron fan, but I love that movie. So I thought, in honor of the new film coming out and the fact that we're this far into our lives and people are still fascinated by.
Yeah, we're still making movies of something that came out when I was in the third grade.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And
I don't know if I'm the goofus or to your gallant, or if you're the gallant and I'm the goofus. I think I just said the same thing twice. I think we know who goofus is.
I think we know who goofus
is. Yeah. Yeah. Hi. I like the first two films for what they are. But my passion is the ripoffs because it was just never ending.
Yes.
And there's some meat on those bones. Like,
oh no. No, we'll, okay. Let's we'll, we'll get
no,
to
no,
that.
No, no, I, no.
We'll get to that. We'll get because I do want to know, because I'll bet I've seen maybe half or two thirds of what you're going to list, because I was looking for them too when they came, when they, you'd see the video box and so on. But let's go back to the original film.
Sure.
Do you remember the first time you saw it? Was it on VHS? Was it on a television broadcast?
It was on a television broadcast. It was probably like CTV would play pretty much, I think, uncensored movies after a certain hour. And I never sought out Alien because I had seen it at the bookstore in the Whitby Mall as a kid. I think there was a graphic novel. I think it was Heavy Metal did it. And
yes.
So and wasn't there also a photo novel?
I think there was. I think you're right.
Yeah.
There was a photo novel.
I think those two things kind of spoiled the film for me. Like, okay, I know what's going to happen. You know, this thing's going to come out of his chest. And I'm pretty sure I saw Saturn III before I saw Alien.
Yeah, which again is just mad.
Yeah, I know. You're living in
an upside down world. So as a kid, but you see the great. Now, see, for me, I remember going to B. Dalton and finding this. I knew I'd seen either the commercials or the cover of Starlog or whatever it was. Star Wars is on the brain. Alien. It's a space thing. What the hell is this? And I found that Heavy Metal, which was it Dick Giordano? Maybe was the is he an artist?
You know what? I thought it was Corbin.
I forget, but it was produced by Heavy Metal, and it was a strange thing to because at the time, there's also one I have that someone made. I just caught a YouTube video of.
It was Archie Goodwin,
but the art was
Walt Simonson.
Walt Simonson.
Yeah.
There is a comic book adaptation of 1941 that I believe was also produced by Heavy Metal magazine, and I've got it somewhere, and it is beyond offensive and strange that this would even be a thing that would happen at the time, that you would make a, because there wasn't a, I don't, unless it is, and I don't know, there was no comic book adaptation of Jaws that came out. But they did one for 1941. And so this Alien one, when I saw it at B. Dalton, it would be one of those things that almost like the book, you know, The Joy of Sex, you know, as a kid, you're like, oh, but, you know, like try to sneak a couple of looks. And then if somebody comes by, like put it back. Because, you know, and that's kind of what this Alien book was for me. It was like, okay, this is, they're swearing in here and there's blood. I've never seen this in a comic book. And the number of trips back to B. Dalton, I ended up reading the entire thing.
Yeah. Well, I've told you of my history of being a mall brat, right? Like growing up. I absolutely did, you know, like they didn't even look at me when I walked in the store. I probably just was loitering 247. So
yeah, I was kind of afraid that if a worker, I was afraid of two things with the Alien book. One, that it was something I shouldn't be looking at it because I'm a kid. That's the sense I got from the graphic it was. And two, that as a bookseller, they come by and go, hey, whoa, you gonna buy it or are you just gonna?
Yeah, that guy and, from every like old time. Hey, Pally,
you gonna buy that copy of Orgasm or what? So I think
the most trouble I ever got in that Key Books was they had just stacks, like they had a big rack of those Whitman 3-pack comics.
Oh yeah, you start.
And I really wanted to know, you know, what's in the middle of that Mighty Samson and Dr. Solar? Like, am I getting Magnus Robot Fighter or am I getting Porky Pig? You know.
Did you open them?
No, I would, you know, you were trying to.
Oh,
like,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Like you Gretz had some sort of, you know, magic.
Jesus Christ. That's what you're doing. At the same time, I am shivering in a corner, horrified by this Alien book with the two-page spread of this thing coming out of this man's chest. What's interesting to me as a fan of science fiction that you are, and a fan of horror and a fan of monsters and so on, is that just made me want to see the film that much more. You read it and went,
Well, because I knew what it was. I don't know why.
What the fuck?
Like, I don't know why I think like that. But I was like, well, I don't need to see this because, you know, I just read it. And it must have been a photo novel because I remember the Ash. I think I found the Ash part more horrifying than the chest burster because of like that milk. Like I remember that being sort of like,
Well, we should get this out of the way right away. If this listeners, if there's any kids in the room, I know
there are.
We've got a lot of underage fans of the podcast.
Actually, you know what? I actually do have. I want to say a shout out to Brett and his dad, Brett. That was amazing. I had a 13-year-old.
Oh, okay.
Who loves my magazine and loves my books, and it was like, oh my god, you know, like
the podcast too.
That I don't know, but you mentioned it and you triggered it in me. Really nice thing.
For a 13-year-old, nothing that I'm about to say is too graphic, but there's no getting around the fact that similarly to, you know, just hear me out, similarly to Dr. Strangelove, where there is such a sexual undertone to so much of what's going on in Dr. Strangelove, the names of characters, the opening sequence of the plane getting refueled and the pole connecting to the other plane, et cetera, et cetera. It's kind of hard to discuss Alien without talking about how sexual so much of the design and the conceptualization is it for that film. And even down to Ash, Ridley Scott at some point, either in a commentary or somewhere, said that rolling up the magazine to suffocate her with, you know, orally, to get that down her throat, it was that there was a sexual frustration that this android had because his he didn't have the bits that worked the way everyone else's, or what, so it was something. And of course the milky substance that's there, and the design, I mean, all of Giger's designs, the face hugger, the underside of the face hugger, the alien itself, the eggs opening, it's so I sometimes marvel at how not. And again, we got to go back to Alan Ladd Jr. We got this guy to thank for Young Frankenstein and Star Wars and Alien and Blade Runner, that someone wasn't going, hey, this is looking pretty filthy. Like everything.
Yeah. You know what? You're right. You're right in some regards, because there's like a lot of dripping in moisture. Yeah. I never thought of that. I just thought it was cool.
And it has real sexual kind of, you know, under and overtones, if you will. I mean, the alien mouth itself is, I mean, and Giger was a
dead sexy. Honest. I mean, nothing.
I mean, and all of this again goes back to Dune and Jodorowsky trying to do Dune. Because that team gets taken on to Alien, and everybody knows the story, Dan O'Bannon and Shusett and all these other people and designers and so on, and Giger. But, you know, someone said in one of the documentaries that, like, meeting Giger the first time was like, well, there was a story about, you know, his girlfriend, you know, had died, and he kept her skeleton, or he had her skeleton somewhere or something. Like, he was just like a creature from another planet, and everything he did was just so freaking weird that it took someone like Ridley Scott to go, okay, I get this. This is going to work. Again, I'm fascinated by it because it took everyone by surprise. It made a ton of money, and it shocked in a way that 70s cinema could do that you rarely get, really, until, you know, someone like Tarantino starts to flip the script again. You don't get that kind of shock much anymore. And I just think it's a miracle of a universe coming together, and Sigourney Weaver too, because it originally was a male lead in the script, and I think it was possibly Ridley's idea, I forget, to make the lead female, but it she'd never really done anything. She was like a bit part in a Woody Allen film, and she hadn't had something this. Again, she had to screen test, and most of the studio didn't like what they saw, and so she thought she was going to get fired all the time. It's just again one of those stories. But so you see the book, and you don't ever care to see the film. So you see the film for the first time on television, yeah. And then does it do anything for you, or are you just like, I'm going to flip over?
Yeah, this is the thing. I just never really, and I just never really had the passion for it. And here's why. I think I'm a little like alien predator jaded. Like I can remember going to I used to have this friend who recently passed away that had a comic store. His name was Ken. And he was kind of like that cool older brother. Like he was, you know, able to have a store and a cool apartment. And so like, you know, I'm 17. He was like 25. I think the guy gave me my first, you know, non-dad beer, you know. And I remember he invited me over to watch Aliens on his Laserdisc, you know, with surround sound. And I realized like, oh yeah, I haven't ever actually seen Aliens. Like, I missed it.
Hold it. We got to pause.
No, this is the 80s though. I did watch it in the 1980s.
No. Laserdisc, that Aliens coming out on lasers, I think was about 90 or 91, 92.
Oh, you know what? You're right. It wasn't, he had, whatever VHS, you're right, because the Laserdisc was The Abyss. I don't know why Ken always wanted me to watch James Cameron movies.
But what you are saying is that seeing it on VHS, and let's just say for history's sake, argument's sake, whatever, when the VHS, let's say it's 87 or 88 when it hits video, probably 87, you know, maybe within a year of when it came out. You didn't see the film in the theater.
No.
Okay. I don't take this the wrong way. Please don't take this the wrong way.
We're going to change the name of this show to What's Wrong With You.
I'm not trying to make fun of you or judge you. I find this fascinating. To me, it's like, you know, someone who's never heard the Beatles, you know, and you just go, what? I'm not asking you to like dig them or care about it, but you've never heard of, you don't know that that's a Beatles. I'm fascinated by the amount of stuff that you like and that you're into and the universes that you collect and that you're into. And along comes a movie in 1986 that is like the biggest movie of the year that everybody is going to. You had no curiosity to go and see.
No, I may have had a job or something. I don't know. I just don't remember where I was.
Were you just more interested in Haunted Honeymoon? That was coming.
I saw Haunted Honeymoon. I don't think I saw Haunted Honeymoon. I think I saw the one with Steve Guttenberg. Oh, I can't remember.
The Man Who Wasn't There.
No, like a
Cocoon.
No, it was Eric Idle. I can't remember what it was. I feel like it was like ghost movie.
Oh, High Spirits.
High Spirits, thank you.
Yeah, it's actually directed by Neil Jordan. Peter O'Toole was in it, not Eric Idle.
Yeah.
By Neil Jordan.
In my defense, Eric Idle had a TV show at that time where he was ghost, and it was actually really good.
It was called Nearly Departed, and it lasted like five episodes. So that's
it was funny. I actually liked Nearly Departed.
And that was about 1990 or 91. That was after 2000 came out. But no, so you saw High Spirits in the theater, the one with Steve Gutenberg and Peter O'Toole and You saw that in the theater in 86, 87, whatever it was, but you did not see Aliens when it came out. In the theater.
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
I also saw Madhouse with John Larroquette and Kirstie Alley with my girlfriend after.
I don't know why that didn't work out. So let's look past that. So when your buddy shows you the movie the first time on VHS, you're just kind of
No, I enjoyed the film. I enjoyed the experience.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, no, I don't hate it. It's just one of those things that, like, I love all the things ripping it off more. I do not, and this is something, and you're gonna get mad, but
I don't own
Alien or Aliens or actually any of the films on any sort of physical media, but I own Creature. No, I own Galaxy of Terror.
You act like this is that we've been doing this for 6 months. If you think that I thought you have any of the 20th Century Fox Alien films in any format whatsoever, you have not been paying attention to this.
Well, this is the one thing. I used to have them on VHS because I am married to a woman who adores those films, but does not think they are science fiction horror. She's like, no, that's just science fiction. She's got some sort of block there, and over this.
Because there's arguments to this day about Jaws, whether it's a horror film or a creature feature or
a thriller.
So, yes, that's totally valid. Okay, so maybe we should get her on the show.
She doesn't want to do that, and I don't want that either.
Appearance. But she likes the movies. Okay, so what? But
oh yeah, she loves the movies. But and she made me. I've never seen Alien 3, and so I can't even. I know some friends who did, but she did drag me to Alien 4, which wasn't hard because I liked Winona Ryder and there's a few cast members in that I liked.
Ron Perlman.
Brad Dorff.
What's the guy? Michael Wincott.
Michael Wincott, who's not in a lot of stuff. He's not, and
he's wonderful.
Yeah. It was a popcorn, movie. It was trying to please.
So let's just. I got to keep pausing here because I don't want to lose the narrative here. So, but what's also interesting is that you're interested in the things that have ripped off the original thing.
Absolutely.
Down to the letter almost, some of these, that Italian one is so, it's almost recycling the script in Italian and Creature, which I also saw on VHS, and Extra was probably another one that you saw and you thought maybe this is like anything.
it's an Alien ripoff.
so it's, that's the part that's even more confusing to me. That
I just think I like the rabbit hole of how stupid does this get?
Okay, so now we're getting down to it. So there's an affection and a love for the B movie quality or the sort of
I love ripoffs. I mean,
so give me an example of a film, of a certain caliber. Because this, again, it's not a trial here, but I'm trying to figure out.
I would say that one of my favorites, and God help me if I have to explain this, is Contamination by Luigi Cozzi.
Sorry. Hang on. We're gonna get to Luigi. Give me an example of a. Let's say that you didn't like The Godfather, but you liked all the low budget ripoffs of The Godfather. You didn't really care for Alien or Aliens, but you like all the knockoffs, etc. Can you give me an example of a larger, more appreciated thing, a more worldwide sort of a love for in that sort of caliber of film? Something that you can because you do. This is why your taste is so fun and the stuff that you dig, like Bedazzled. I mean, I've never met anyone else that knows Bedazzled the way I know Bedazzled, and it happens to be like one of your all-time favorites.
It is my favorite. Comedy.
So I'm trying to see if there's something like.
So would I'm sorry, but I actually kind of went off to the woods there for a second. What do you want me to give
you?
Well,
no, I'm trying to think.
Something I like as well as Alien, or something I like better than Alien?
No. Something that exists, a movie that exists like Star Wars or Close Encounters or Alien or Blade Runner or The Road Warrior or whatever, that you go, you know, that I do love The Road Warrior. Like, that is.
Oh, yeah. No, I would like easily say too, I would I easily love, say so. Mad Max.
Okay.
Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Apes.
Star Wars, like, to a point. I love Star Wars. I mean, it was, you know, Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, no, and there's lots of stuff.
The motion picture too. You're a big champion of the first one.
Yeah, I am, and I also love the first Halloween.
Okay, now
I
don't know if I knew that. I don't think I ever knew that you liked that first.
Yeah, no, we actually have, we've done a John Carpenter episode.
Okay, because I thought, oh, maybe because it doesn't, because you were okay with, that's the level you were okay with.
Yeah, no, I just think that's an excellent film.
But you just, like Carpenter. I mean, you just, like The Thing, and you like Escape from New York, and you. Those,
oh, dude, I about Prince of Darkness. Yeah, no, I'm a
Darkness. Okay, guy. All right. So, yeah. So of that sort of, I would say The Thing for you might be that level of, you appreciate that above the ripoffs, let's say, or the ones that are less.
Oh yeah, no, I actually don't. The Thing ripoffs aren't my favorite. Because they're usually technically great, but just not good movies. Like, what am I trying to think of? The one with Peter Weller. The Abyss? No, The Abyss is wrong.
Leviathan,
yeah. It's such a... It looks great.
And the other one, what's the one that was done with around the same time with... Treat Williams, that suddenly has taken on a cult.
Oh, Deep Rising?
Deep Rising. Now.
Yeah, but Deep Rising was, I think there's a big difference. I think it's like 7 or 8 years between.
Oh, was it? Because that was, but that was more goofy. Deep Rising was more goofy, I think.
Yeah, I've never seen Deep Rising. I'd like to.
Okay, and Leviathan was actually pretty smartly done, pretty well done.
It's technically well done, well acted. It's just, you know, It's just, I don't know, it doesn't work.
Well, the other reason I wanted to talk to this, because you brought up Alien 3, and it's certainly the one that I've seen the least. I mean, I've seen Resurrection, you know, maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3. I mean, I've got the box set, you know, but all it's really about are the first two, or mainly, I could watch just the documentaries about the first film over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
But the third one I saw in the theater, and it's kind of relevant to what's been going on lately, and we've talked about this before, and I stand by it. I fucking hate the term fan service. I despise it. I hate that it's ever come up. I think it's stupid. I don't know where it came from, but it becomes a real slippery slope when whatever the thing is, or the vehicle is, or the legacy thing is, that if there's a wink or a nod, or look, it's a similar logo, it's like fan service. Because back in 1992,
That's how I also hear that word.
I just want to kick it every time I hear it used, the that term. Because back in 1992, and what you have to give them credit for, they make the first film. Nobody quite knows what this thing is going to be. They're all terrified of it. The Fox people, you know, only a handful of them really get it. The cast aren't even sure. And takes on this other life. They're going to make a sequel. They just don't know what it's going to be. And, you know, from 79 to 86 is a good chunk of time. And I think Cameron, he was maybe involved before Terminator, but then he had to do Terminator. I forget. And then that, you know, his credit kind of went up with that, et cetera. So they make the first one is a horror film in space, kind of.
Haunted house horror
and many, many other things in one go. And then very smartly, the idea was, instead of one, there's a bunch of them, and we get these badass Marines, and instead of, you know, ultra violence on screen where a bunch of humans are getting blown to bits, it's going to be these aliens. Won't that be fun? And then they're trying to do a third one. And the story of trying to make that third one is, it borders on insanity of just the number of ideas, at one point, there was a director called Vincent Ward who did a great film called The Navigator. I don't know much of what he did, after, but because of this film, The Navigator, which was a time travel thing where these people, I forget what era, but they come into the modern, and I think it was a German or Dutch film, I think. Great film. And he's attached. And it's going to be like a planet or a satellite made of wood, you know, like just the most crazy freaking things. And so what they end up with, and now they're under the gun, you know, to get this thing going. And, you know, David Fincher and like, well, let's get this music video guy. It's the early 90s. Then he should be able to make a film. And again, it's not a god awful movie. If you see the director's cut, you realize there's a decent movie in there somewhere, like a decent. Well,
you know what? But
what I'm getting to is, but from the moment you push the boat out, you have torn it down. You've said from the very beginning, there's no happy ending for these characters, and I'm sure that had to do with Sigourney Weaver too, saying I never want to play this character again. And these beloved characters, I mean, it truly was a kick in the gut seeing that film in the theater and going, what? Like, it was the first time, really, that, I mean, even with the Roger Moore films, like, I could roll my eyes as it, you know, like, oh, James Bond, oh, God, that was a, you know, I'm keeping the British end up, so, you know, like, oh, that's another dick joke or whatever. We could, you know, but it was Roger Moore, it was James Bond, whatever. That movie was the first time I sat in the theater and just kind of went, what? Did they just kill the little girl and Hicks before the movie started? Like, where are we going here? And it is dark and it's depressing and all the things that it's been criticized for. But they were trying to do something different with it. If anything should be held up to for these, you know, all these little freaks on YouTube that are constantly bitching about these, they should be gagging for Alien 3 going, that's how you do it. That's how you don't give people what they want kind of thing. But they don't. And everybody hated it. And it's still hated. It's not despised like it used to be. But it's pretty freaking hated. And then they do the Resurrection one. And, you know, certainly.
That seemed to not go over well.
I don't think it went over well. You had Sigourney Weaver. It's hard not to like the fact that she's back. But you never forget that you just blew her chest open in the previous movie and we got her back in this thing. But I find it interesting in light of the criticism that I've seen for this new one, and a lot of it coming from, you can't say the line from the thing with the thing and it makes sense. You can't. I mean, these people are just venomous they're having spasms in these YouTube videos about what they don't like. But it's like, okay, what? I don't know exactly.
Thing bad is a very popular motivator.
Yes, well, yeah, that's it's fascinating to watch Red Letter Media and what's been happening with these guys recently, where they're not turning the ship around. They're still being critical. They're commenting on more and more, you know, newer films, but they kind of saw the fork in the road where it was like, I think unintentionally there's a lot of offspring that we've got from the terms of what we've done, and we need to get away from these people because I'm not blaming Red Letter Media. It's not really their fault. But if you start the thing by tearing everything down, you're going to get imitators that find monetary gain from it.
Well, yeah, I view it like, you know, shock jocks, like Howard Stern came out there and then he got imitators.
Yes.
And a lot of those imitators ended up getting fired because they were just pushing it too far, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's to the point on some of these, and we won't name them. We've discussed them before, but, you know, without naming them, but some of these are so, they're so gross. They're so, it's
oh,
so,
it's just, you're mad about everything. And nothing's ever good. Yeah, it does have, I think, like, its limits in terms of like how these things go down. Like, you eventually you're gonna go, okay, so everything sucks, you know, right? Fine.
And you also would ask, why do you keep doing this if you hate all of this so much? Why?
God, yeah, this is all causing you pain.
Yeah. Why are you miserable? The other thing that's weird that happened, because the next thing we get is Prometheus. Now, did you see Prometheus or Covenant, either of those two films?
Oh, yeah. Okay. The one thing I want to say before that is I did watch a documentary on YouTube about the Alien franchise. And the number one, I think, recurring factor is studio interference.
Yes.
That's really effing with this. And you know, you are glossing over the two Alien versus Predator films that are.
Well, I wasn't gonna quite gloss over them. I was gonna get to them, but I find them separate from the world that I'm, because the world building that they're doing and that's in the newest film is still, there are still callbacks to, you know, Weyland Yutani and things like that and these different things. And and I'll be honest, I've seen the first one and I saw part of the second one, the Alien versus Predator thing. Now, I could be generous and say, if you're into that sort of thing, you get aliens and predators fighting in a movie. I didn't find the first one unwatchable, I guess I would say, but it was.
But not plausible, right?
Just kind of like, why are we doing this? I mean,
I don't think I've ever seen, like, I think I've seen the first one.
I think I saw the first one and then part of the second one and I went, why am I not?
I may have been in a hotel somewhere and seen part of the second one. But yeah, well,
count them, kind of. I feel like they're just kind of.
Well, you know, Predator and Alien, and there's a couple of things where I have this incredible theory that maybe these things just get two movies and we're done. Like, the universe just doesn't get explored.
Fair enough. Yeah.
You know, the onion has been skinned. I don't know what the, but it's like, I think some things just have limited storytelling. And I know the alien monster is iconic, and but it is a kind of just a mindless killing machine. So yeah. you don't have, you know, you're trying to build this lore, and then. No, I just, before we get into Prometheus, I want to talk about that, because I went crazy this month and actually had this epiphany. Planet of the Vampires. You've heard of this film, the Bava film?
Oh, yeah. Beautiful yeah. looking film. Great.
Yeah. Great looking film. I actually really loved it. I mean, even though, like, some of the design work is like, why is this spaceship bridge like a high school gymnasium?
Why is it so sexily? I don't know.
Yeah, but it clearly influenced the first Alien film. Scott denied it, but then I guess
Ron Shusett.
I thought it was the screenwriter who.
But Dan O'Bannon
Ron did Ron actually cop to it. He said something to the point of like, oh no, that was Planet of the Vampires influence.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But then you get to a ripoff like Creature, which is more of a Planet of the Vampires ripoff than it is a remake, than it is an Alien ripoff in some ways. And then I watch a movie like Prometheus, a movie that, like, I want to love and want to make sense, and it keeps hurting me.
I could not agree. It looks
it's beautiful, and it looks like, because I love Creature. Creature's a broken film. I like Planet of the Vampires, and obviously Ridley Scott's up Planeters at some point after that, because, you know, he's got it out there. But the film itself is so, I don't get what he wants. I just don't get it.
I've seen it more than I probably should, and it's
it's a Saturn 3 for me, where I just keep rewatching it.
That is sort of beloved by a certain contingent on YouTube that kind of go, no, you guys missed the boat, kind of thing. When there was not you did not hear a good word about it when it came out, but it looks incredible, and the actual scope of it, and the scope of getting onto that planet, and taking the moon buggy to get to the thing, and whatever, it looks amazing, and it has really great, interesting ideas in it.
Yeah, it just doesn't really,
terrible dialogue. Absolutely fucking dreadful dialogue between characters. Most people.
And also, I just want to point out, like, there's one point where there's like a zoologist and he sees this thing that looks like a cobra.
I was just going to say, most of the characters do things that don't make a lick of sense.
Yeah, it's like, dude, that looks like a snake. I'm scared of snakes. You know, you would not just be like, oh, hello, little fella. Like,
oh, no, I got this. I got, hi, what are you? Look at, oh, it's fine. I can train it like a monkey. It's,
yeah, it should have looked less threatening than.
There's a scene, the first scene between that actor, who I like very much, who is, what's his name's son? God, why can't I think of I'm forgetting his name now. But and the tough guy that was like a villain in one of the Mission Impossibles, like, and he's Sean something, a great actor. But I mean, just his face and his voice alone, I don't think he's ever played a decent character, like a nice person in a film. And he's sitting down, he's woken up from hypersleep, and he's got like soup in front of him. He's, hi, my name's Jeff. I'm a biologist, and I like what it, listen, I like rocks, man. I'm only here to make money. I don't give a fuck what your name is, all right? Get away from me. Oh, okay. From that moment, you go, okay, this is gonna suck. If this is how you think people should be talking, fine. And the Guy Pearce thing never made sense to me, because if you missed paying attention to the marketing and all the videos that were done online before the film came out to see him as a young man, seeing it in the film, you go, why did you get Guy Pearce and put him in 100-year-old makeup? It doesn't make any sense. But you're doing it because you're going to have him in these you know, viral videos that came out prior, which you could have missed if you didn't know about it. And
I
then
just it's heard a, about those now.
If you get to make another film, he'll be in that one, which he's in a little bit in Covenant. Now, if you think people did dumb things in Prometheus... In,
yeah, I wanted to just tell you that Covenant was half watched by me last weekend while I was like waiting to go to dinner at Mego Meat. I've never seen that one.
It just, again, you just go, and all these ideas, and I love Ridley Scott. I have to clarify it in the sense of, you know, if you want to compare him to like a Kubrick or someone, where it's like Ridley Scott's had a lot of patchy movies. It doesn't mean he's brilliant, but it doesn't mean that he's everything he's done, like, you know, Someone to Watch Over Me. And, I don't even like Gladiator. I don't think it's a bad movie. I saw it once. And I went, okay, fucking, okay, who cares? But the idea of saying, Let's get into, you know, the space jockey, the thing that's in the chair with the come out with the thing. Where did that come from? Let's do a story about that. Now, on paper, that's kind of an interesting thing. And then you get Prometheus, where you're left having to put all the pieces together on a DVD commentary or extras or YouTube videos throughout the years or whatever, because it's not coherent, where you don't understand. There, you know, he stops on Earth at the very beginning, takes the thing, falls into the thing. Oh, okay, so we did come from these you know, these celestial beings, whatever the hell they are. Da 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 da. Why are they mad at us? Whatever. Well, Covenant just takes all that and kind of craps on it from the first, you know, 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, know? No, oh. I watched a good chunk of it, and it's, yeah, I'm not sure what we're doing here. I didn't understand what the point of it was.
So at all. Again, you've got I will defend these things.
They look beautiful, by the way. Like,
yes, you, yes.
It's such a. I think that's part of the problem, is that it just looks so damn good.
The design and the
oh yeah,
the realism, you know. But sometimes people just go, look, if you're going to do the thing, this is what I want. If you're going to make a James Bond film, I want martinis, I want sex, I want him to shoot people, you know, and some, you know, the occasional gadget or whatever. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If it's done well, you can say, I don't need to see the rest of them. You know, there's a new interview with Tarantino on this Bill Maher podcast. I forget what it's called, but I'll listen to Tarantino talk about movies day in and day out.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And he was talking about the Toy Story trilogy. He said it is one of the greatest, if not the best, trilogies ever made. He said it is
sure so is solid.
he said it's so good that you just like when you get to the third one, and of course, you know, Bill Maher is going, what is it, a cartoon or what the fuck, you know, it's and Tarantino's immediately going, you're not gonna, you know, I know you're never gonna see it, doesn't matter. Here's my point. And his point was, and then they made a fourth one. And he goes, now that could be a good movie. I don't know. I've not seen it and I'm not going to see it. I've got my Toy Story 1, 2, and 3, and I think they're perfect, and that's it. So I won't begrudge these studios for milking a thing or saying, you know, we're gonna.
Oh yeah, I'm not mad about it.
When I was in the theater to see this film, there were 8 trailers, and every one of them remake or a sequel or a something. And so that's when you kind of notice, okay, yeah, they've run out of ideas and they whatever. But then you get something like Deadpool and Wolverine. And I've never been, I'm nothing against Deadpool. I have nothing against the character. I don't dislike the character. I just never, it just kind of passed me by. It wasn't like, oh man, the Deadpool comics are great. And I enjoyed the first two movies. I enjoyed, you know, much of them. I think I like the second one better because it's got Josh Brolin in it. Ryan Reynolds, to me, is the luckiest man alive. Because if you lay out his oeuvre end to end, you're lucky if you can find 4 films that are decent. He's made so many. And with this Deadpool thing, you know, did the smartest thing to release that test footage, and then somehow it started to happen or whatever. Now this one comes along, and I'm sure you haven't seen it. I've seen it. I will see it again at some point when it's on Disney. Oh, you did see it?
Yeah.
Oh, see, now I wouldn't have thought you would have bothered to even see it.
Comedies.
Right, I forget how much you liked High Spirits. I forget that.
Yeah. I actually did. I saw it. I enjoyed it.
So you saw it. Okay.
Oh, I don't take the, like, first of all, I've never bought a Deadpool comic, and I think I owned 1 X-Men comic in my entire life. So this is not like something I take serious, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was funny, and
I did too.
You know, I did too. Every comic book movie doesn't have to like world build, or it just has to be fun.
Thank you. I thought it was fun. And for me, selfishly, it's like, to me, that is. And I think Hugh Jackman is a wonderful actor. I mean, I've seen more stuff than I think most people have of his. He's wonderful. And as great as Logan was and the other, I mean, it's hard to think of an actor that came along with a legacy sort of character that, again, hadn't been played except for an animation. And from the moment you see him, you go, I don't care that he's not 5'5", whatever. Like, I don't care. That's the guy. That's the guy.
Yeah.
He is
alongside, I think, like Chris Evans and Christopher Reeve.
Yes. 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 100%. And he's so good in this movie that I go, that is the best he's ever been as Wolverine. Like the best it's been written, because now you've suddenly gotten what everybody wanted for so long, an R-rated, let's make him just feral and violent and say whatever comes out of him. And you got it. And he owned every scene he was in. And I thought it was so well balanced, you know, the smart ass and the straight guy kind of thing. And then when I take that turn in the car, when he gives that speech about, you know, really kind of choose Deadpool out, and it sort of starts to turn and the focus kind of gets more on Wolverine. So, but I come out of it going, if he's pulling that off and they want to make 6 more movies with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, I'm in. I'm going. Like,
that might actually happen.
Yeah, like bring it on. When it's done well, when it's done right, and I think a lot of the disappointment with a lot of this stuff is the studio interference that you mentioned, or just the wrong person steering the ship, or the wrong idea getting pitched, and you go, is that really what you think people want to see right now? Like, you think that's what's going to remind them? And so there was definitely a purpose with this new Alien film to go, okay, you had those two, Prometheus and Covenant, and you know, they made a few bucks, but let's face it, you know, they it's not built up enough interest. And everything you're seeing for this and all the marketing was, you know, face huggers. And I mean, they did this thing, this viral thing where they had actual people in different cities just kind of slumped in a corner in front of a store with a face hugger on them, and people were taking pictures of them. I mean, just really smart viral stuff. And you go,
yeah, wow. I had no idea there was an alien movie coming out.
Yeah, I don't know how you missed it, because if you're on the internet or on YouTube at all, like, I don't know how.
Yeah, no, I never got an ad until a few days before the film came out, and I was like, gee, that does kind of feel like something that would happen to me. Like, people would assume, like you do, that I'm a big fan of Alien.
No. I never thought you were a big fan of Alien. No. Oh. I never thought. I've known you long enough to know that that's not a.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I think a lot of Scott's influence is more impactful in my life than his actual work, because, like, you know, Alien set design is something that just changed science fiction. You know, seeing the crew in their street clothes, yeah, was, you know, it was like, there was a lot of stuff in there that was, I think, you know, revolutionary for the time.
I would go back to what I said toward the top. When you watch it again, or when you do see it, it's so well acted and so real, and you know the way. I mean, there's great stuff on one of the DVDs and one of the sets where there's like two or three cameras that were set up, yeah, and you see it from different angles, whether it's the chest burster, yeah, or just
I'm just gonna say this, it's sort of like he was doing a little Robert Altman there.
Yes, I was gonna say very,
oh, okay,
that Altman thing of, I could be wrong about this, but I believe that was the first time in MASH that you had characters kind of talking over each other like,
yeah,
that. Yeah, you know, yeah, Wells, yeah. Orson Welles liked doing it where he would jump in as the other character was sort of finishing a sentence. He would, oh, Mr. Vengeance, yeah, well, then maybe perhaps you should think of it. And he'd kind of do it at the end of a sentence. And it was a thing that he did on radio, and he did it in The Third Man, he did it in Citizen Kane. But the way Altman did it, where you had multiple characters talking at once, and they had to mic it special, and he does it again in what's the one? California Split? Is that the one with Elliot Gould and George Siegel? I think they're gamblers, and there's a bit of that in there. But you really realize how good that is in Alien, how smart the casting is, how great the dialogue is, how the rhythm of these actors getting into what these characters are. And of course, none of them are household names, and they're all kind of going, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, what is this thing going to be? It's only when you see it imitated, only when you see the other sort of Alien films that are trying to get that tone.
Yeah.
You know, a little different in Prometheus because it's a little more clean, but you're trying to get that dude sitting down with the other guy having soup and going, hi, my name's Benjamin. I like animals. What's your deal? Look, I don't care about fucking rocks. All I care about is rocks.
You know what that is? I forgot about that clunky ass.
That's when you realize, you go, yeah, you can't touch Alien. Like, yeah, you got close in Aliens, the rhythm of those Marines, and they're a little more not cartoonish, but they're a little more one dimensional than the characters in Alien. And you know they developed backstories for all of those characters in the 79 film. And also we should say that at its core, what's interesting about it too, and again, if there's any kids younger than 13, perhaps leave the room. It's about a man getting impregnated. I mean, that first film is a man getting impregnated and giving birth. And it's, you know, it's commented on in the script at one point when Ash, who we find out later, of course, you know, isn't that nice, says, you know, when Yaphet Kotto comes in, Parker comes in and says, no, this thing's big. it's big. It's not the thing that came off the table. I mean, this thing's huge. And then Ash says, Kane's son.
Ugh.
Which is just beyond creepy.
Yeah.
But that's another thing about it that's fascinating to me, that yeah, this is about you know, I think one of the reasons
procreation has a
tone
there. Yeah.
And the egg opening up. And I also just found this out, which I can't believe. Well, you wouldn't probably know this because you saw it on VHS and didn't really care. I only just the other day found out that at the very, very, very end of the credits for Aliens in 86, there is a sound effect of one of the eggs opening up.
Oh.
You hear this like kind of thing, like an egg's opening up. Now, clearly in 86, they're thinking if this thing works, we're going to do another film. But yeah. I don't think anybody in 86 was like, well, that'll be the egg that kills the little girl,
yeah.
And the badass dude that was the hero in the movie. And, you know, so it's just interesting to me that it's there's something about that. Everyone I think has been trying to get back to the feel of that first film and somewhat the second film, but really the first film. And it's a very, very difficult trick to pull off. And I will say that I enjoyed the new film, Romulus and Remus, or Goofus, Alien Goofus and Gallant, I think was the name of the new film.
Yes.
But I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it much
more. I think Ridley Scott's going to do like a, I don't know if it was, oh, you know what, it could have been a AI thing.
Scott was going to do a Goofus and Gallant $40 million picture. I'm going to.
Yeah, actually, would you not believe that? I would kind of believe
it. I would believe it. And I'd be disappointed.
I saw something, but I realized, like, you know, you have to double check your sources now. Or else you're, you know,
What was the thing?
Oh, I think I got my chain yanked a little bit on this. Hang on. Somebody had created a poster. Ah, hell, I hate being fooled.
Upcoming. No, yeah, it doesn't.
But you know, it's not that weird because he's doing Gladiator 2. But somebody had posted a poster for a Ripley prequel.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, please let that not be real. And I got my wish.
I'm grateful that something like that hasn't happened.
But again, yeah, that, because I, like, as much as I like Furiosa, there's so few things you can do that with.
And Furiosa is another one that I don't know where the negativity really comes from, because I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed every scene. Yeah.
I did not see it on the big screen, but I did.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there going, this is George Miller. This, you know, and when people say, well, it didn't do, it's like the biggest movie George Miller ever did was Babe. It was about a talking pig. You know, the other movies did not do that well. They're not the money makers that people think that they are. They're just iconic.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Fury Road is a friggin' masterpiece. And there was time taken. You know, it's like the Hobbit movies. Mm-hmm. You know, there's good stuff in that first one. I think second and third one, I think I only saw once.
I've never seen any of them.
But Lord of the Rings, they had years of pre-production and, you know, putting, you know, symbols on arrowheads and things and so on. And The Hobbit, suddenly it was like, okay, got to shoot it, got to be out by Christmas, go.
Yeah.
And it feels like it. And so Furiosa, you know, I mean, people are complaining about, well, the green screen and the thing with this. And it's like, okay, so, but who fucking, you know, and someone else was complaining about Chris, which one is he?
Helmsworth.
Yeah. I thought he was terrific in it.
He excelled at that character.
He did. Because
that character was a buffoon.
He did.
And
someone complained, like, well, first thing I think is like, well, you know, with the nose and the teeth. And I go, he's gorgeous. He's absolutely gorgeous. And the only things he gets are the gorgeous hero type guy, or maybe an asshole occasionally or whatever. Yeah. So if you're going to get him, if he wants to work with George Miller and wants to create this character, I know I'm watching him. I know it's Chris Hemsworth. But, you know, I bet my buddy's mother-in-law, if they watched it over the weekend, at the end of the film, if he said, you know, that's the guy who played Thor, she'd be going, it was? That was Thor? No, that wasn't Thor. You know, we all
the man with the ridiculous fake nose was Thor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what she'd say. It's like there's so much of that that you just go, oh, my God, you're ruining everything. So the question is, you rather have George Miller have another crack, you know, up at bat.
Oh, yeah, I loved everything. I really actually loved that film.
Furiosa. Furiosa?
Yeah, I did.
Did you like it more than Fury Road?
No, but I just didn't think it sucked. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
no!
It was a good entry to the franchise, I thought, personally, anyways.
You're talking about Furiosa?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was. I like it better than Thunderdome.
Hey, listen. It didn't have that song.
Can't we just get beyond Thunderdome?
Careful. It didn't have. That's still a great tune. I want that played at my funeral, frankly.
I sing that often at certain flea markets I go to.
That's on my funeral mix.
Where they're selling like rusty pans.
But Furiosa. What I also liked about it was, and I'm going to probably say her name wrong, but I've seen literally everything she's done. Is it Anya or Anya Taylor-Joy? Is it Anya or Anya? I don't know what it is.
It's the girl from the chess show.
The girl from the chess show, the girl from the M. Night Shyamalan movie, the girl from the other thing, from the Northmen and so on. She's terrific. But she doesn't have a lot to say in the movie. And
well, according to what I've read, they couldn't de-age Charlize Theron convincingly,
right?
And Miller said, sorry, it's just not going to work, and he had to cast. And I think she did an admirable job, and I honestly kind of forgot.
Even think about it, but I'm saying that as a lead, there's not a lot of dialogue there, and good for her for going, you know, like she's got every choice in front of her, you know, she's got piled up, and she goes, I want to work with George Miller, I love his stuff, that's the thing. Well, you've only got about 7 lines, like I don't care how long I'm in the desert or whatever. And it just, and again, when you're just sitting there going, this is a George, we've still got another George. We're living in a world where we get another George Miller film in.
And he hasn't kind of like fallen off in quality, you know, because like, and this is parallel to Ridley Scott, where I kind of feel like, I'm not real into what he's done in the last.
I would agree that he is not. It's like, you know, I always say this about Coppola. Like, you know, it's easy to make jokes about Jack or like, well, Tucker, the man in his dream didn't set the world on fire. But when in one decade you can make Godfather 1 and 2, The Conversation, and Apocalypse Now in the same decade, it doesn't really matter. And so it's like Ridley Scott. Really, if you got Alien and Blade Runner, and I suppose people would probably put in Gladiator. The Duelist is a great frickin' movie, if anybody listening hasn't seen it, which was his first film. He's made a lot of movies, and if 4 or 5 of them are, you know, kind of epic or
like The Martian was a big hit.
Martian was a big hit.
Yeah.
I think Gladiator won Best Picture. You know what's a great one that he did?
Thelma and Louise. Oh my God. He's been on top. Like, I mean, there's no taking away from what he's done. I mean, it's pretty great.
He's taken a lot of left turns, and Thelma and Louise was great. But the recent one with Adam Driver and Matt Damon, I think it's called the Last Duel or The Duel or The Last Duel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of came and went. I didn't see it until it hit streaming. Great film, and it's I don't want to say too much, but it's got a bit of the Rashomon thing where you think it's going in one direction and then it sort of turns, and it was not what I expected, and everybody in it was great, and Ridley Scott. But yeah, he's kind of, I mean, but he's, you know, he's I think he's 85, I think, or 80, yeah. 83 or something. And, you know, we're lucky to have these guys. But I mostly wanted to have the topic because it is in the consciousness at the moment. And I know how you feel.
Yeah.
The ripoffs. Now, Creature, who directed the movie Creature when you were talking about it earlier? Do you know the director of that?
No, I don't. It was.
Here's what I remember Creature. The tall chick in it was Simone from Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Right. And yeah, you're right. That's so funny you mentioned that.
And she said, Merci beaucoup, Pee Wee. And he goes, Merci
blah, 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 blah. Yeah. One of my favorite lines in the film.
And the other favorite line is, but what, Simone? Everyone I know has got a big butt. What's your big, let's talk about your big butt, Simone. But she says, do you have dreams, Pee-wee? Yeah, yeah. I'm rolling this big donut, and there's a snake wearing a vest. Like, no, 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 no. Not those kind of dreams, Pee-wee. I'm rolling this big donut. But she's she's kind of like the Ripley in Creature, if I recall correctly. Yes.
Yeah. And,
or is she a robot? Is she a robot?
Yeah. No, okay. I think she's kind of like I'm trying to figure out, because Wendy Schall, I think, is the protagonist in the film. And she's, Francine from American Dad, and she was Mr. Rourke's niece that they just abused on the show. But it's also got like Lyman Ward and Klaus Kinski, of course. And
that's another thing that I remember is that's when I started to kind of know who Klaus Kinski was, is that movie. Like I'd seen the Herzog Nosferatu on television at some point. I don't know how. And I thought I was watching something that was related to Salem's Lot because they were both bald vampires.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, no, that kind of works. Yeah, I kind of find Kinski's Nosferatu really, really repellent.
You ever see? Have you seen any of the what's the show? Documentary Now. Have you seen any of those?
No.
It's written by Fred. Oh my God, Fred Armisen and what's his name? John Mulaney and guys like that. You know, familiar faces in these. And each episode is riffing on a different famous documentary, like The War Room about the Clinton campaign in the early 90s, or Salesman, the black and white salesman thing. So each one is different. I think it's the third season. There's a two-parter. That's riffing on Werner Herzog and Klaus Kinski. The director who has gone to the ends of the earth to this primitive culture to document their journey in civilization, the most primitive culture. But at the same time, he booked a pilot for CBS called Baby Nanny or something like that, about a college kid and it is hysterical. But it is so dead on with the way it's pimping the relationship between Herzog and Kinski. It is absolutely worth it. If that's the only one of that entire series you watch, watch the two-parter in the third
season. Yeah, I have seen I think it was like My Best Fiend.
Yes.
Documentary. Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah.
Although there's a part where Herzog says something that I want more. I've said this to my kids, my son especially, where it's like, Kinski's overreacting, and so Herzog grabs a piece of chocolate, and he's like, and I ate the chocolate in front of him, and it calmed him down. And I was like, I need more on that. Like, how did that work?
Did you see, have you seen the clip of Mark Kermode interviewing, I think it's Kermode, in L.A., interviewing Herzog? This is maybe... No. Maybe 10 years back, they're standing on over a ravine kind of, I forget, somewhere up in the hills. And he's just doing this interview. And all of a sudden, Herzog gets shot. There's some asshole across the street with a pellet.
Oh, my son talks about this. It is not significant.
It is not significant. It is not significant. Like, it's so, it could only have happened to Werner Herzog being interviewed. Yeah. And his reaction, it's the most incredible. And I don't know anything else about who the guy was with the air, who the pellet gun or what the hell happened. But it is an insane piece of footage to see. And his response is, it is not significant.
Shall we celebrate and end to our shared narrative?
You got to watch this. You got to find this.
Yeah, I know. I'm probably going to seek that out in the next 5 minutes.
It's very, very, very funny.
So do you want to put a bow on Alien?
I stand by it being a gorgeous piece of cinema. I love it. It hasn't lost a bit of its impact for me. I love the, I'm not like a huge, you know, Alien collector, but boy, when NECA finally got the rights for the actor faces and did the Mobius, you know, space suits and
oh yeah, all that stuff is gorgeous. When they first did that reaction set,
yeah,
many years ago,
going through all my stuff and packing up, I've got the early bird kit. I've got one sealed. I bought a second one sealed.
I bought one on principle just because I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I ended up selling it years later, but I just wanted to throw money at it. Like, you know, like, no, I'm more of this. And yeah. So I'm not immune. I don't hate Alien.
About the thought that, I mean, we haven't even mentioned the giant Kenner figure that is legendary.
I remember the TV commercial for it, though, as a child.
There's something really twisted and I've never really gotten a complete straight answer on it, that there was a target set game with a gun and the alien and a board game and gum cards and this toy, and there might have been a 4-inch range of figures that was going to happen. We know this now.
And I probably would have bought those because I was one of those kids who bought at least one character from everything.
But I mean, can you think of another? I can't think of another more inappropriate, other than the Hogan's Heroes rack toys that you found once from whenever that was, to say this is a hard R. You know, the kids are going to love this. Let's get the alien creature out there and let's do whatever. I mean, that's another aspect, puzzles. They did puzzles and things. That's another aspect that's kind of insane. Like they didn't quite know what this thing was going to be. I think
Star Wars was a real issue for changing the game. Like you wanted the next Star Wars, and this was not it.
No,
but I remember those. I got some of those trading cards, and I don't think the aliens in a single one of them.
I think you're right. In fact, our good pal Rockford J sent me some pictures the other day. He's got collections of different gum cards from the era. Yeah. And you're right. I don't think there's.
I think I remember getting a pack of mainly Yaphet Kotto.
Live and Let Die fan.
I'm 7. I just wanted space.
You just wanted a cross 10th Street set of gum cards. That you were good with that, your Fet Cutter.
Yeah.
But then you got it with Alien. So I got the NECA stuff, and you know, Galoob years ago made those in beautiful. I forgot what they were called, but you know, like what's the shuttle that she's on at the end? The Narcissus, is that what it's called? The little shuttle.
Oh. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, they had that whole range of
they did Alien Head, and the Alien Head opens up and it's got a teeny tiny little cane on the little dinner table and a little wheel that you spin behind it where he just kind of spins around, little teeny alien coming out of his chest. So I've got stuff like that. I love the alien itself, the design. But of course I'm not like I've got to get everything from every, you know, Prometheus and whatever. That original film is really very, very dear to me for
It's super neat. I really like it.
And the score. But, you know what else? What it made me think about this too, and this idea first came into my head to do this episode or to talk about it. That sound that's in the trailer, and they did it again for the 86 trailer for Alien. That is so effective. And they did it again for the, yes, I know, honey, I know. That was Bowie. That was Bowie chiming in. They did it again for the Spy versus Spy, Alien Spy versus Spy movie that just came out. They did it in one of the trailers, that beep, that kind of sound. Yeah. And it's so effective. And but nothing tops that first one. It is, and I do love the second one, but I think the first one is,
well, it's a different film though.
And they
smartly changed the genre a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, and it holds up. It really, really holds up. I watched it again for the first time in years. I don't know, 6-7 months ago, and I was just, because I do not like James Cameron. I do not like Green Eggs and Ham. I do not like James Cameron. I will give props to The Terminator, and I will give massive props to Aliens and bits of The Abyss, and then after that, you know, no interest whatsoever.
He's a very it's a little heavy, his storytelling sometimes.
Yeah, or just kind of, I think the word you're looking for is cliched, perhaps.
Yeah, you're right.
But Aliens is full on. I mean, it is just, know, you also notice when you watch it how great Michael Biehn was. It's such a sad, and he's still around. He's still with us, and I'm sure he has a great life and he's fine, but. There was an interview not long ago on some podcast where he said that he was, you know, down the bottom of a bottle for about 20 some years and kind of ruined his career. But when you realize he got dropped into that thing like 2 weeks into filming, kind of like Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now, same thing. And he's so, and you're like, God, this guy, he would have been huge. He could have really been much bigger than he was, but anyway, that's and I always like hearing about you. What's the Luigi Vicari one you talked about, or Fettuccine Alfredo? Who's the guy that did the one?
Luigi Cozzi. He did a film called Contamination.
Is that the one that's an Italian one, but it's like a hodgepodge of Alien and something else, kind of.
I know what you're talking about. You might be talking about Shocking Dark, which is sort of like Aliens and Terminator. And it's
okay. I think you're right.
It's a bad acting contest. But no, Alien Contamination doesn't actually make a lot of sense. It's like these two astronauts come back from Mars and they bring back this alien, and the eggs make humans explode.
Oh,
for some reason, and I don't know why, but I just like I can't put that movie down. But
that I just watched, and now I'm drawing a total blank. I just watched it the other night. It's done by this husband and wife team, and now their daughter has been in a couple of their films too. They're called they're known as the Adams Family, ADAMS. The husband and wife, and they both act in the films. They write them and direct them together, and it's about this corporation in like Slovakia or somewhere. They're doing some drilling, and up comes a cocooned body, and it's like a French guy from, you know, 200 years ago kind of thing, and then kind of worms start coming out of his nose, and it's this creature that by disturbing the earth, like a sea creature, but some type of it's a creature. This is a B plus, I guess, kind of movie. And what it does, it gets inside you. It jumps from, you know, if it feels like, if you point a gun at the guy and it feels threatened, boom, explodes the body and the creature runs, and then it makes its way into the next host. Yeah. It's called like hot as hell or something like that, or road rough end because it goes up your bottom or something. I forget, but it's still that thing is still working in a lot of B movies where it's the
absolutely. And host. I mean, like the theme kind of I think it has a long life because it's never going to not be scary.
Did Planet of the Vampires have the
had possession of the dead bodies.
Possession of the dead body. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the thing they always talk about in the documentaries. When Ron Chassay or Chassette, whatever his name is, he comes up with the I got it. It impregnates the host, and then that was the moment that they said that's when everything kind of changed, when the script started to come together. The notion of that was so he must have been pulling from the vampire thing too, but in a different, much more graphic
Way. Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah, I just I admire your taste. I'm fascinated by it. I love finding out little Brian's journey back in the 80s or whenever it was. I'm always fascinated to hear. But so wait, you didn't see Ghostbusters 2? You liked the first one? Yeah, it was all right. You didn't see the second one? No, I had a job that summer.
But I was front and center for Fletch Lives. Figure me out, dude.
Exactly. That's what I'm fascinated by. Wait, was that the Yahoo Serious thing? No, that was Young Einstein. Oh yeah, I definitely saw that.
I did not. I saw Young Einstein on satellite.
Right. The night it aired, the very first night, I'm sure, probably.
No, I don't know about that. I don't remember ever really wanting to watch it.
I don't even know.
I've seen his Ned Kelly movie. Maybe I've never seen Young Einstein.
I don't know why Yahoo Serious didn't get bigger, but he was. I remember that issue of Premiere Magazine. I'm sure you remember Premiere Magazine. And each summer they do their, here's what we predict will be the biggest of the summer.
And yeah.
Summer of 89. And I think that was, they thought that was going to do better than Batman, I think.
And they also thought Great Balls of Fire was going to be this huge movie too.
Yes. Yeah. Oh God, Great Balls of Fire. I can't remember who directed that. But that was Winona Ryder.
It's like, I think you've overestimated a movie about a guy marrying a grade schooler.
Yeah, and Alec Baldwin's in it, and Winona Ryder. That was right after Beetlejuice, I think.
Yeah.
88 or whatever it was. Next episode we're gonna do Beetlejuice, the cartoon, every episode of the cartoon, the original film. I've
never seen those. Okay.
Oh no. Well, you've seen the movie. You've seen Beetlejuice.
I've seen Beetlejuice.
Okay. Yes. All right.
Wow. And I enjoy Beetlejuice. Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a start.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Always.
All right.
There you go. We're always learning about each other. That's what.
Sharing is caring.
That's right. It's like couples therapy each time we do an episode.
And I think we both earned a gold star.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Well, pardon me. You've been very busy this summer.
I'm settling down for the fall, so we should do like some more chats.
Let's do some more chats. I love it. And we clearly have fans out there.
I feel really like when you said let's do this tonight, I was like, I'm in because I miss doing it.
I mean, if we're helping people through tough times, we're almost obligated to keep.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. And it, you know, this show's helped me through tough times. So
there you go.
Yeah.
It's only done just terrible harm to me, but I still love doing it.
Yeah.
No. I love it. It's great. It's been too long. So we'll do it again very soon.
Yeah. Sounds good. Take care, everybody. Right.
Thanks, everybody.
I'm going to stop recording and.